WBNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, ESPN 97.5.
That's what we call ourselves, sort of like a team.
A Gao Media Station.
Manchester City is still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero!
Here goes Ronaldo!
Cross, and Dempsey is denied again! And Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this?
Surging forward with real menace here. Brilliant from Messi. Oh, what a goal that is!
Is a renterswarehouse.com roadshow live from Los Angeles. This is Soccer Matters, on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
The first hour of Soccer Matters is brought to you by Texas Children's Hospital. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into the gorgeous Gale 55-55 Morningside Drive. We're in here after Belgium winning the third place match at the World Cup here in Russia. If you're out and about on the town, you're driving around, pop into the gorgeous Gale. Tomorrow, the World Cup final will be here. I'm going to warn you right now, get here early if you want a prime spot here. Peter and company are all geared up for tomorrow's France-Croatia match. So make sure you get here early. Again, it's the gorgeous Gale, 55-55 Morningside Drive is the place to be. So get down here. If you're out and about on the town right now, come and join us and talk some soccer here. Have a couple of good cold beverages, some good lunch. We've got some giveaways here. We got some Soccer Matter swag, t-shirts. We got some Dynamo FC Dallas tickets, which is a week from today. So a lot to get after here in the next 2 hours. We're going to preview France-Croatia as well. And joining me today, and this is a nice little gift that we're going to get here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. He's a technical director of the Texan Soccer Club up north of the city, but also a former Major League Soccer player who learned his game on the fields here in Houston, Texas. He's Eric Quill. Eric, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Yeah, you and me got double duty today. We're going to do a little radio now.
Let's do it.
And then tonight we're going to cover the Dynamo Colorado game on the Cube. Tonight a little bit later on, but what we're going to do now is really focus on a World Cup final, France and Croatia, a lot for the next 2 hours. If you want to join in the conversation, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776 is the number to call in. Let's do a little recap on this third place game. You know, obviously everybody says, well, third place game doesn't matter. It seemed to matter to both of these teams. It looked like Gareth Southgate gave a few more players opportunity in this one. In the end, Belgium wins. Eden Hazard scores, which I think is fitting for him. It's been a heck of a tournament for him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Belgium has a high, high power offense that, you know, with Hazard and Lukaku and De Bruyne, I mean, they can't be held without scoring for any length of time. So I think, but England in the second half, I thought really, I mean, had they taken a couple chances that were on the doorstep, maybe it changes into a different game and it goes 1-1 and who knows what happens. But I think the second goal obviously killed the game off. But, you know, give England credit. They had their chances in the game to equalize, and they some good performances. And they're very young. So I think they've had a good stage and a good tournament, as everybody has said so far, but they're primed for the future for sure, I think.
All right, so we also have an element out there. Before we get back to Belgium, let's talk a little bit about England. There's a lot of people that are tempering England's results here in this tournament. 713-780-3776. And what I mean by tempering it is saying that they had a very easy group stage with Tunisia and Panama, that they had the absolute right side of the bracket, and I don't think there's any question that happened, but I also wouldn't take away what Gareth Southgate and a young England team has done. But it's interesting because there are two very fiery camps about what England has done in this World Cup.
You know what? I don't care what side of the bracket you're on. It's tough to get to where you got. You had to go and take games. They weren't given to you. I think what England sort of did was they really, really focused on their set-piece attacking. I think you saw a lot of goals come from set pieces, which, you know, let's be honest, I don't. It's part of the game these days, and I think that it rewards a lot of teams that focus on it, and they have the size, the hunger, and again, they took advantage of those set piece opportunities that I think gave them a lot of, you know, put them in the semifinals.
65-70% of the goals in this World Cup have come off set pieces. There's no denying that has been a focus. And you said teams have spent a lot of time on it. I think a lot of people have. Does that concern you a little bit? Because, you know, if you kind of look deeper into the crystal ball, you can say, okay, teams now can play not to score goals, but to earn free kicks in and around penalty areas. And we've seen teams that almost prioritize that at times over scoring goals just so they can get on set pieces. Is that a worry?
I don't think so. I think if you're a strategist, if you're Gareth Southgate, you know your player profiles and what you have and size advantages and mismatches. You know, I think it's part of strategy. Is it fun to watch a team that's just playing for set pieces and doesn't have the run of play type players that make the game interesting and showboat a little bit? But no, I think they took advantage of what their player profiles gave them, and you can see when they set up. There's movement, there's hunger, there's strategy to what they're trying to do in set pieces versus a lot of teams. You don't see a lot of method to their madness when it comes to these, you know, players lined up in the box. They're setting picks. I mean, there's obvious a focal point on it, and which, if you're going to be good at it, why not be great at it, right?
Well, there's no doubt we've seen some incredible free kicks. It started very early with Kolarov and Cristiano Ronaldo in the group stages, and it's carried on throughout. So it has been pretty remarkable off dead balls, but boy, for those of us who are lovers of open play and patterns and movement, at times it's been tough for teams to get that going against very organized, collected defenses.
I think the modern day game, you're seeing a lot of low restraining lines, you know, try to open up for the counterattack, which, you know, when you have weapons like the Hazards and the De Bruins, I mean, it makes sense. It's a smart strategy to sort of invite teams into you, which allows you to have that 60 to 65 yards of space when you break them down, when you turn them over. And you have the weapons to hurt you on the other end. I mean, I just think they can get out and run. Even Lukaku's size. I mean, the guy can get out and run. So it's a you know, I don't. It's a strategy these days that a lot of teams are taking. You know, and again, players are so good these days. If you open up holes and you don't get collectively organized, you know, I think you've seen that you get punished at the highest level if you're not having two banks of four and, you know, sitting deep and making it tough for teams to break you down.
Well, in the case of France, it was at 1.6-4 in front of them, because I was looking at my TV screen and I'm expecting to see a striker come back into it, and then I realize it's actually Giroud and Griezmann that are actually a part of a line of four in front of a line of six at times in their 1-0 win in the semifinals. So it's pretty remarkable. And speaking of that with France, let's talk about a team that guys have bought in, right? I mean, the Griezmanns of the world, you know, he was quoted today or yesterday in the press conference saying, look, this isn't about individuals. This is about us getting the mission accomplished. We don't care how it comes. Even if it's ugly, we want that World Cup star on our chest. They're going for a second. And, of course, in the case of Croatia, we would get a first-time-ever World Cup winner. But have you noticed that there's been stars in this World Cup that have become very selfless?
When you watch France play and you see, like, sort of dead ball opportunities, you see a halftime huddle, these guys are truly look like they care about each other. There's a real friendship and a bond that they're showing, and they play like it. I mean, these guys are selfless. Everybody's defending. Griezmann's turning the ball over, trying to do whatever it takes to get the ball back. You know, nobody's standing around. There's a collectiveness to what they're trying to do, and they really look like they enjoy playing with each other. I mean, the bond that they show just through playing. I mean, some of the one-touch intricate passes, the sequences they've had, I mean, they really look like a team that enjoys each other more so than anybody I've seen in the tournament so far.
All right, when we looked at the managers of the last four teams, I liked all of them. I thought they were all inspirational managers, maybe different in some ways, but they all seemed like their teams were clearly in tune with what the manager wanted. Zlatko Dalic of Croatia, Didier Deschamps won a World Cup in 98 as a hard-working, water-carrying midfielder for the likes of Zidane. You had Belgium and obviously Roberto Martinez, who had pulled off some very good tactical things. These were four managers that certainly at this phase of the tournament, Gareth Southgate obviously has got the ear of all his young players. I just thought these guys were really inspirational, exciting to watch. The managers to me were very fascinating, which always isn't as doesn't always necessarily jive with me, but I thought these four guys were incredible leaders.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what he ultimately judged on as a manager, I mean, I think the number one thing is, you know, do players buy in? Are they showing that on the field? Do they have that will to want to win for your coach? And, I mean, that's just, again, you can't play the game as a coach, but you want to instill that mentality in your team. And I think every team showed a really strong mentality throughout the tournament. And, you know, again, it's about the players, and they understand that. And they're trying to, it's maximizing talent, right? And that's what they've done.
You can hit us up here at 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. Want your thoughts on the World Cup in general. We'll take your thoughts on the third-place game, what this meant to England and Belgium. Certainly for Belgium, it's an extra $2 million because Belgium will get that based on the fact that they won the third-place game. So when people ask you, what does the third-place game mean? It's prideful, but there's also $2 million additional that the winning team gets. So, yeah, it pays a few bills, you know, or you could donate that to charity. The eventual World Cup winner will end up walking away, I think, with $38 million. So it's pretty interesting. It's the game you don't want to be in, the third-place game, but I would think today, and I know you watched all of it. I missed a little bit on the way over here to the Gorgeous Gale in Rice Village, but seemed an entertaining game, and it seemed like there were two very committed teams and managers, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
You would have never known it was a third-place game if it didn't say it on the screen. I thought both teams were going for it. The up-and-down play was of a final. And again, you don't want to go out losing two games in a row. No, if these are the ultimate competitors at this stage, and so there's pride on the line. There's a lot on the line, and so whatever you want to call it, it was not played as a third place game.
Not at all. Eric Quill joining us. He's a technical director of the Texans Soccer Club here in Houston. Long time in the youth community. Just to date myself, I used to coach youth teams against some of the ones that Eric was on. But he's another one who. Great local stories here with a whole bunch of guys that went on to Major League Soccer and have gone on to be great coaches at the youth and college level, and even I think there's some assistance at the pro level. So it's just another example of the great soccer community we have had here in Houston, Texas. Just want to remind you here, if you want to call in now, you can join the conversation, 713-780-3776. We're streaming at ESPN975.com. We have a small, intimate crowd here. Mr. Peter Kingston is working over there, who's the top man here. He's getting ready for a big World Cup final tomorrow. And, Peter, we need to get people out here early, right? Is that what you're telling us? You want to get here at 8 a.m., he's yelling across the Gorgeous Gale here right now. In fact, these people in front of me right now have decided to stay here through the night. I'm just kidding. They have mimosas, so... I'm thinking it might not be a bad night after all. So thank you guys for being out here. What is that? That's an Astros jersey you got on there. Okay. I didn't think it was Belgium. 713-780-3776. We're going to have a good time down here. Podcastarena.com for the podcasts. Also on iTunes. We're going to continue to talk it here. We have tickets for the Texas Derby between the Houston Dynamo and FC Dallas. That's a week from today. We're going to give some of those out. Again, tomorrow here, it's the World Cup final between France and Croatia. Simply, who do you want to see win the World Cup and why? Two excellent teams, in my opinion. I don't really have a dog in the fight here. I'm going with Croatia because I'd like to see a first-time World Cup winner. It is a small country. They are an amazing story. They have gone three straight knockout stage games into extra time. And, Eric, that in itself is pretty interesting, because I think as we were watching the semifinals at halftime, we're going, well, maybe, you know, fatigue has finally caught up to these guys, and lo and behold, they got a second win and actually looked the fitter team when they end up winning in the second half. So just a remarkable run from them.
Yeah, they're you know, what we call the consummate grinders. I mean, they grind results, and there's a never say die sort of attitude, and you know, they're the competitiveness that, you know, the Mandzukic's of the world hold, and Modric and Rakitic, I mean, the spine of this team is really, really good. And I just think that they're never out of it. I mean, they just show every game that there's an inner will and a belief that they're not gonna go away. It doesn't even matter if they're, obviously they were down early in the game against England, and they come back and turn the game on its head in the second half and take it over. So There's just something to be said for those cider, those grinding type teams that just never say die. They won't go away. So, and they're not going away tomorrow. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I think we got to be careful because we did see them grind it out, and we hear a lot of people using the word grind it out. But this is a team with guys that are littered throughout some of the biggest clubs in Europe. There's a number of these players that were in refugee camps and had very, very credible, hard, heartbreaking stories growing up with family members and stuff with the civil war in Croatia and the fall of the former Yugoslavia. My big talking point going into the last game and in the semifinals against England was I wanted to see Luka Modric, obviously played higher up the field. He was, as he had been at other times in the tournament, but there were other times where he sat deeper with Rakitic and they had Kramaric playing behind Mandzukic. But my big thing was Perisic, Rebic, Mandzukic step up, and they absolutely did. In fact, two of those guys were goal scorers.
Yeah, I mean, the first goal, I can't remember the name of the guy who scored the first goal. Rebic was a competitive monster. I mean, the guy was slide tackling everywhere. I mean, he's sort of that guy that you, when you think of Croatia, he wears that heart on his sleeve, and he's breaking up plays, and he's all over the place. And you know, I just think they're. I mean, Mandzukic is an ultimate competitor. You can see it throughout the phase of the game. Like he's truly upset when he's got that opportunity and misses it, and he wants another one. He's just going to be a handful for every minute he's on the field. And I don't know. I mean, those type of guys are hard to play against for 90 plus minutes because eventually they find their way in the game.
Big man, 6'4". That's a great matchup, Mandzukic against Umtiti and Varane. Those are three heavyweights right there that are going to be banging it out in the World Cup final tomorrow. Umtiti and Varane for France have been excellent, haven't they?
Oh, I mean, so just going back to the Lukaku matchup, and Umtiti, I mean, Umtiti.
He wasn't in that. We didn't know where he was that day.
No. I mean, it was truly amazing, the shutdown ability that Umtiti has. And he's only gaining more and more confidence throughout the tournament. I mean, for me, he's a world-class superstar in this tournament.
Yeah, no question about it. His value's going to shoot through the roof. Another one that's underground, before we get to some of the stars of France, Matuidi, I think, is, and at times I think Tolisso has started in his position one or two of the games so far for France. But Matuidi, just from a defensive standpoint, has added so much to Kante and Pogba before we get into those two. But Matuidi is another one of these ones that not a lot of people are talking about, but then when you look at his performance over the course of a very short tournament, you're going, your jaw's dropped, really.
Yeah, you know, you got to love those type guys. I mean, again, are they going to, not the flashy, they're the get the job done kind of guys. And I mean, I think what it's done is it's allowed the Griezmanns of the world to sort of reap the benefit when you have, you know, these guys working so hard to break plays up behind you. You know, it's almost like the old days, you're almost allowed to have the 10 sort of just be, you know, hanging out. Until the ball turns over in his favor, because he trusts, you know, Pogba, Kante, and Matuidi so much that, you know, he doesn't have to exert that type of 10 effort on the defensive side of the ball that you see around the world these days. So I just think that those guys, their ability to cover ground and close things down early and just suffocate you, it's something to behold.
So much going on here. We're at 5555 Morningside Drive in Rice Village. We are preparing for the World Cup final between France and Croatia. We're going to break this down for the next 2 hours. We are going to take a quick break here. Reminder, we got tickets for the Dynamo FC Dallas. If you're out and about on the town, come on in. Join us here. We've got swag. We've got some T-shirts. We got a number of things to give you. Peter, who is one of the owners here, at the Gorgeous Gale, says, look, you want to get here at 8 a.m. tomorrow. You want to be plugged in here before the World Cup starts. Again, I'm picking a World Cup. I want a first-time World Cup winner, Croatia. What do you want, Eric? What are you looking for? You want France or do you want Croatia?
I love the story of Croatia. And so, I mean, again, like you say, I don't have a dog in the fight either. But if I look at a pure talent, I mean, just I think this French team is primed to win it. I think they have a belief now. And I think pound for pound, they, you know, if you like the paper battle, they are the paper favorite. I won't be upset if Croatia wins. Let's put it that way.
All right. So who do you want to win the World Cup tomorrow? You can give us a reason why as well. France or Croatia? France, it would be their second World Cup. Croatia, it would be a first ever World Cup winner. Only eight nations have ever won the World Cup. They would become the ninth. We'll take a break. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number. Before we go to break here, just a quick word for the Gorgeous Gale. We're here at 5555 Morningside Drive. Wonderful place to come. Tremendous food here. All kinds of spirits, all kinds of beer on tap. Great whiskey offerings. This is the official home of Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 during the World Cup. And tomorrow will be our last live broadcast. So this is 6 out of 7 today. Tomorrow will be the 7th. We hope you get down here tomorrow. Make sure you get here early. 8 a.m. is what Peter is saying to get in here and get your seats and get ready for France-Croatia. We'll take a break. We got more to come. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from the Gorgeous Gale in Rice Village, this is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
The first hour of Soccer Matters is brought to you by Texas Children's Hospital. Here's Glenn Davis.
He nodded down. Here's Lukaku playing it to feed Chadley left. Plays it across. Goal! Belgium on top.
Okay, well, JP, it's game on here in the fourth minute.
Welcome back to the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive. Tickets for the Dynamo FC Dallas at Texas Derby. Giving out some T-shirts here, some Soccer Matter swag. So if you're out and about on the town, 5555 Morningside Drive is the place to be. It'll be the place to be tomorrow morning because it is the World Cup final between France and Croatia. And we hope you get over here for that. Quick word here for Bud Light. Bud Light, big sponsor of Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. They have been just wonderful supporters over the year. They are the official beer sponsor of the 2018 World Cup games. You'll notice after the games, the guy that gets the Player of the Game award, including Perisic of Croatia in their last match. It's sponsored by Budweiser. So they are a proud sponsor of Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, and the World Cup. 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776, joined here by, he is a longtime Houston soccer person. Eric Quill grew up playing the game here, went on to play many, many years in Major League Soccer for a number of teams, including Sporting Kansas City. We're taking your calls at 713-780-3776. Real simple question. Who do you want to win the World Cup? We want to get a gauge. Is it the French? Is it Didier Deschamps? Do you want to see the French grab a second World Cup title? Or do you want to see Croatia for the first time ever with it? And what is symbolic of Croatia's run in this World Cup? These are things to contemplate. Croatia has been pretty aggressive in saying that they feel like around the world they're going to get most of, if not more, of the support than the French just based on their story and the way they've gotten here. Many of these players were in refugee camps. They all now, remarkably, all ply their trade on some of the biggest soccer teams in the world. It is a remarkable story how they've progressed in this tournament. They've won all their knockout stage games in extra time and or penalties. So they have played over one additional match plus probably another 20 minutes. So fatigue potentially is something that we're thinking about again. We thought about that in their semifinal against England. We did see them look a little sluggish, Eric, when they started the game out. But at halftime and into the second half, they found it, especially after they scored an equalizing goal.
I think that the extra minutes on their bodies, I think, come to play late in the games, and I think they showed a second gear. They got their second or maybe even third wind in some cases by the end of that second half and into overtime. And I think that, you know, look, this is just who they're such a strong mental makeup of that whole nation that, you know, as the game gets higher, as the game gets harder, and these players, you know, again, we use the word grinding. They're able to grind and put the hurt away and go find a way to be victorious. I really love this team. I just think that they have weapons. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Modric is a superstar. He can change a game quickly. If France comes with a semi, you know, laissez-faire attitude, they're going to get punished, and they can find themselves really in a world of hurt quickly. if they're not, you know, walking in on that field saying, you know, we've got to take this game today. It's not going to be given to us.
French seemingly, you know, that's all been dispelled by the French. They said, look, we got 100% respect for Croatia. Let's examine a little bit how the French, and by the way, don't think that the French don't have battlers and grinders, too. I think that's, you know, because we're driving this narrative of Croatia being the team that has the battlers and the drivers, and you know, it is an amazing story because of all the extra time they've had to play. They played an additional 90 minutes plus, and let's not forget, that's 90 minutes plus on the legs of the same guys because they have not made a lot of changes throughout this tournament. But to not say that French doesn't have, the French national team doesn't have grinders. Their manager was a grinder, Didier Deschamps, when they won it in 98. Their team is definitely, I think, errs on the side of caution, despite the fact that they have players like Griezmann and Mbappe. I mean, we saw them drop off deep and defend in a real low block after they got the 1-0 lead in their semifinal match against Belgium. So, you know, we got to be careful that we're not slighting them, right, Eric?
No, that's right. I mean, look, credit to Didier Deschamps. I mean, I think his ability as a manager to change tactics and not just sort of believe that he's got the better side, and he has a lot of respect for these guys, and I think he does a lot of, you know, research and game film watching, and the fact that he changed tactics a little bit and had that respect for Belgium, and you know, I thought the way they played was absolutely spot on. And so I think that there's, who knows what their game plan against Croatia is going to be, but I just think that, you know, sometimes managers get caught doing the same thing every time, thinking this is who we are, this is our style of play, we're not going to change. But, you know, I think in the modern day, if you can change and your team can be flexible, and we talk about flexibility and tactics, it's a huge key that if guys can be on that same page and understand and have the aptitude to understand the flexibility and tactics and you know, if things are going to change, what their role changes to be. So they've shown that that's, you know, again, do they have some, you know, Mbappe, is the physicality of the game, if they're coming in to kick him, what does that do to his mindset? He's a little bit of a finesse player, doesn't like to be touched. And you're going to have to kick him, bottom line, because the guy can absolutely fly. I mean, he's Usain Bolt with skill. So you couldn't ask for a better combination. And so I think if I'm Croatia, that's one of my game strategies, is to make sure that he gets no time on the ball, and I'm kicking him. He's going to take as many of the fouls as we can possibly give him. And, you know, you got Giroud, who, again, love him or hate him, Giroud is he's such a good hold-up player that allows those numbers to get in the attack and to really create a lot of chances, because he's just you know, he targets himself and holds it so well. And when he's sharp laying the ball off is when you see a really good French attack come out of midfield with Griezmann and stuff like that. If he's a little bit off and messy on his layoff exchanges, I think you can see a little bit of frustration happen within the squad at times. But when he's clean and those guys, Mbappe and Griezmann, and are able to sort of get higher up the field quicker, I mean, they are really, really dangerous. And Giroud, he gets his chances. I've watched him quite a bit now, and he gets shot opportunities, but they're just coming off too slow. They're always getting blocked. And it's like, why does this happen? And it's just little bitty things. It's just a quickness of being able to strike in that 18-yard box. And it's more of a technical thing. Turning and quickly firing is tough. He's got this long sort of leg swing. It's like the equivalent of the jump shooter in basketball that, you know, if you're 6'1" playing against a 6'6" guy in front of you, if you have this long jump shot, it's going back in your face, right? So it's just changing, being able to change and be that sharp finisher in the 18-yard box, and I think is just why he's not scoring more goals. But again, his hold-up play is the key to France getting in the attack.
Well, it's interesting because he hasn't scored a goal in the World Cup, and the bottom line is Didier Deschamps threw all in on Giroud for all the other things that he brings, occupying defenders, the things that you just mentioned, his hold-up play, his battling spirit in there, obviously comes back and defends corners. There's a lot that he brings, and it's pretty amazing because we all remember that at the beginning of this tournament, Karim Benzema is a guy that everybody thought was going to come to a World Cup, and boom, not here. No Payet either, did not make this team. No Anthony Martial. So this is a manager that has been very, very firm on who he's wanted to bring to this World Cup, has has bought all into these guys, and frankly is one game away from being only the third man in World Cup history to ever have won a World Cup as a player and a coach, the other two being Mario Zagallo of Brazil and Franz Beckenbauer of Germany, who, interestingly enough, we have not seen any images of him at this World Cup because of all the problems with FIFA that I believe he's being investigated and all. That just kills me because I grew up at Giants Stadium watching Pelé and Beckenbauer, and he was just such a mythical figure to me growing up as a kid in New Jersey. And to think that he's got all these problems and has been on the wrong side of all this FIFA stuff is very sad. I go back to my most influential World Cup ever was 74 when I first saw the World Cup final between West Germany and the Netherlands and Cruyff and company and Beckenbauer and Gerd Müller. What would have been your most identifiable World Cup for you, Eric?
I think for me, without a doubt, is 90. I mean, when we qualified for the first as a kid growing up, I've watched many of those guys that who I ultimately end up playing with in my career. But, you know, just that Paul Caligiuri's goal against Trinidad, and just I remember what that was like for me, and just really spurred the passion in myself to sort of be a part of this, you know, United States Soccer Federation sort of cult going forward. I was possessed after 90 and just really loved where, you know, where we were going, and that's what, I mean, it basically formed me to be have that vision of myself to play in Major League Soccer and to be a pro and, you know, hopefully make that stage one day.
It's amazing where the fire gets lit, right? 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. That's also where the youth soccer coach comes in, and we'll get to that a little bit later on, but let's stick right now to the World Cup final. A couple of questions for you out there if you're driving around in the car. Let's answer them. 713-780-3776. Who do you want to win the World Cup? For answer, Croatia, and give me a good reason why. And what World Cup was the most identifiable to you, or what World Cup moment was the most identifiable to you in your years of watching the World Cup? 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number to call in here tonight. Dimitri Payet, we mentioned. These were some very controversial moves before this World Cup. Deschamps has controlled this team and has gotten these guys to buy into the way they're playing. You know, when we watch attacking creative players like an Mbappe and like a Griezmann, and when you see them selfless to do the defending part and the other things that this manager is expecting out of this team, and you see them quoted and saying, this isn't about individuals, this is about us as a team, it's pretty impressive because not every superstar player will buy into that. Not every superstar player will follow through on that. And thus, maybe that's the reason why a guy like Dimitri Payet or Karim Benzema doesn't come to a World Cup. I know there was other things with Benzema, but that's impressive to me, that there's a level of selflessness in a world where superstar athletes, you know, generally are looking after themselves as well as their teams. These guys are selfless, both teams.
Look, Mbappe's 19 years old. Where is that coming from? That's got to be coming from either an on-the-field leader, take your pick, they're out there in that lineup, but ultimately that's the manager. The manager has got to really be doing a good job with a 19-year-old who's coming into his camps, you know, throughout the year, and working over that psyche of the player. I think I give credit to Didier. I mean, he's obviously gotten through to a 19-year-old kid, which isn't easy to do. And then, you know, they always say, you know, the old, you know, saying if your best player is in line with your head coach, you know, everybody falls in line. And there's something to
be.
It's
not the job of the manager. You got to win over the superstar. You got to make sure he's in your camp. Look, that's exactly what Juan Carlos Osorio did with Mexico. He made sure that him and Rafa Márquez were going to be on the same page because Márquez was going to go to this World Cup, and they were great friends, and they both knew they needed each other into this World Cup in Russia.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's you see it over and over again, the teams that win championships. If you look at the relationship between the head coach and the best player on the team, typically they're eye to eye, and everybody, you know, bought in. I mean, because when your best player's bought in, it makes the chemistry and it makes everything sort of click and work. So we've seen it in countless, you know, sports championship teams that have won, you know, whether it's NBA, whether it's, you know, Major League Baseball, it's usually the case every single time. And so I think that French is, the French team has got this sort of chemistry and a buy-in collectively that is evident every time you see them play. I mean, there's a true enjoyment to the way they play. I mean, it's you can just see it oozes out of them with every pass. I mean, they're just on point. The movement and the understanding and you know the selflessness, and even when guys miss chances, there's not a barking, there's not a, you know, that can sometimes take place of high players at this level, and there's a real encouragement behind everything that they do, and they're helping each other up all the time. It's almost like the Duke basketball, you know, like helping each other off the floor all the time, and they just have this they love for themselves, and it's selfless, and it's I think that's why they are where they are. And again, let's talk about how young they are. I mean, literally. If they win this one, I think they might win the next one.
Youngest team at the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, so it's scary.
Second youngest, excuse me. I made a mistake. Second youngest.
Yeah, it's
wouldn't be my first either. second youngest.
So, I mean, I think they only lose. Maybe there's three or four players that they're going to probably age out of this. But their main collective unit is going to be back, and I think they're just going to get better and better. And it's going to be scary what they're going to be like in the next World Cup.
All right, hit us up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. We've been having a blast, and we really want to thank the gorgeous Gale. This has been so much fun to have called some World Cup games in the group stages for Fox and then to come back to Houston and do these live shows has been a lot of fun. You know, obviously today is the calm before the storm tomorrow. It's going to be packed tomorrow in here at the gorgeous Gale. It's going to be packed in bars around town here in Houston. Again, just another validation and an exemplification of how important the sport is in this town to so many. And you know, you find out interesting things, Eric, and you and I know from being in Houston a long time. I mean, I got here in 84 to play on a pro team. You grew up here with your family. But to me, what's amazing is just seeing, you know, a Nigerian community that's crazy about soccer. To see a Danish bar filled with Danish fans for a party. To come in here and see all these Croatia jerseys. Now, not necessarily every one of them were actual Croatians, but they have background and history in their family, and it's been amazing, and it's almost a little secret here in Houston, because I think we forget how many people from all over the world are just so nuts about this game in our town, and we get reminded of it when some of the big content comes through, you know, over at is it Energy now or Reliant?
NRG.
I had it right the first. See what I mean? Energy. So you know, that to me is some of the most amazing stuff that I see and feel here, and to see bars packed, and you know, even just to see general places, you know, that are not necessarily soccer bars, packed with people watching the game.
I've been in countless conversations with people that have no background in the game whatsoever that have been paying attention to this World Cup, and everybody has the same exact tone. They're all, oh, did you watch this game? What a great game! So there's a true collective sort of, I don't know what it is, but yeah. Everybody's paying attention. And so, you know, I think that's where the games are going. Maybe it's where, maybe we have the right amount of superstars. Maybe there's I don't know what the magic potion is that's out there, but there's people that, you know, again, have not kicked the ball in their life, talking to me about, you know, the Russia game. And so it's just fun. I mean, again, when people, obviously I have a passion for it, but to have other people, you know, sharing that passion that maybe weren't around it as much as I was, is fun. It makes me think that we're growing, you know, and you know, growth is fun for me in the sport of soccer, because we've always talked about it. It's been sort of the goal. I know U.S. soccer wants to, obviously we wish they were in the World Cup and we take a step back, but you know, I think that we'll be better for it in the long run. But I think there is growth, and it's becoming more and more evident when you get in these going to bars and you get in these conversations with people all over the place that are taking a real interest in the game.
Yeah, agreed 100%. It's exciting, it's fun. You know, with the U.S. not in it, there's probably a little bit of a hit in TV ratings, but I still feel the energy around it. I certainly do here in Houston, Texas, and we see the visible signs of it. 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776 is the number. The uniqueness of the World Cup is something, though, that also I think is very intriguing to people, because it's every 4 years. My real worry now is with Qatar going to be in the winter, it's going to screw with a lot of the pro leagues all over the world. And the fact that it's there, I'm still shaking my head, but I think we all know why it's there. It's a country that doesn't have any real soccer history. But it's a money thing, and there was other things that happened without really getting too deep into that. The other thing that concerns me is 48 teams in a World Cup. I just hope that this thing isn't going to be demystified, you know, purely for the economical benefits that it certainly can bring by adding more teams and doing these things that can take some of the sanctity out of it, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm sure that there's benefits to both sides of it, but I mean, if you're a purist and the effort and the hard work that's put in to really be a part of that smaller group, right? You earned it, right? Now, when you're letting more and more teams in, does it water it down? Does it become a little easier to sort of? I don't know. I don't know what the.
I think it will. I mean, I'm pretty firm on that. I don't want to see 48 teams. I get people are going to jump on the bandwagon and say, oh, you know, the more that's in it, the better. No, it's 32 of the best. You have a qualification process. We don't need 48 teams here. To me, it just muddies and clouds the waters. And, you know, it's like, hey, do we all get a participation trophy for this? This is competition. This is to be a part of history. It only comes every 4 years. There's only 8 nations on the planet that have ever won the World Cup. It's the biggest sporting event in the world for anybody listening in your car right now. Even if you're an NFL fan, it dwarfs it, okay? And I love all the other traditional American sports. This event dwarfs any other event in the world. There'll be a billion plus watching the World Cup final. Right, Peter Kingston? And he's Irish, and he's an Irishman. He's bummed out the Republic of Ireland didn't get here. But you know what? He's still a huge soccer fan. We're getting some tweets in right now. Atlas says, most memorable World Cup moment. He says, 2002, Torsten Frings' hand blocking a U.S. goal. Can't forget staying up until 4 a.m. with my dad as a 12-year-old to watch those games live. All right, we appreciate that's a good one. Jason Tucker says, in response to who do you want to win the World Cup, he said Croatia would be great. So Croatia, this is a historic game for every person that's Croatian. And these guys in the press conferences, Eric, are making it very clear. They're playing for their countrymen, and they're making it very, very clear. Group stages. I called their opening game against Nigeria. That was a 2-0 win. Then they beat Argentina 3-0. Then they beat Iceland. Then 3 straight matches have gone to extra time. They have survived. They've essentially played now 8 games. One additional game, as we mentioned before, to get to this final. It's been grueling. It's been exhausting. As an example, Ivan Rakitic is playing his 71st game in a calendar year. Now, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. And these are not stroll in the park games. These are games, you know, that he's playing with one of the greatest soccer teams in the world. Do they still got more in the tank? Can they overcome the fatigue?
I think this is, fatigue is not anywhere in anybody's mind or vocabulary at this point. It's they're possessed now. I think it's all they think about every second of the day. There's an adrenaline in each one of them that now there's a belief how close they are. They're 90 minutes away from their first World Cup ever. And they want to be a part of that. I mean, I'm sure your mind wanders to what that's going to do to your, you know, to your country, but for yourself, for the rest of your life, to be able to look back on what the first to be able to do something of that nature is got to be something it's so tangible to them right now that they can taste it. So I don't look. I think both teams are coming out guns blazing, and I think it's going to be a up and back battle, and with just supreme athleticism and speed and technical ability and skill. That's just it's going to be fun for people to watch.
All right. When we come back, I want to find out from you how you think this game starts off. Do you think a page may be taken out of the book of the semifinal against England, where France says, you know what, we jump on Croatia a little bit early here. Maybe they get out of the block slow again. Let's get your thoughts when we come back around from the break. A moment here for Texas Children's Hospital. Now, at Texas Children's Cancer and Hematology Centers, you have the largest pediatric cancer center in the country. It's over 190 physicians and scientists, 46 laboratories, and check this out, 200 active clinical trials. That's research dedicated solely to childhood cancer and blood disorders. For more than 60 years, Texas Children's Hospital has pioneered many of the now standard protocols for treating and curing childhood cancer. Going down there Monday with Freddie Reyes and Eileen Dowd, We're going to hand out soccer balls, go down there a lot. The people that work there, absolutely amazing, not just the doctors, and all the way from the nurses to the therapists to you name it. It is an amazing environment down there that you can't help but feel when you're there visiting patients and kids. And by the way, they have kids coming from all over the world. I mean, you might have somebody from Deer Park, and you might have somebody from Guatemala City, Guatemala, that are there getting treatment. And there's tons of kids in the pediatric cancer ward there that have ties to soccer. So been going down there for about 10, 11 years now, and soccer has been the vehicle, and simply a soccer ball, which I get donated from Nike, and over the years, other people, and we go down there and just hand a ball out and talk to patients and their parents, try to break it up. Hundreds of children are diagnosed every year down there at Texas Children's Hospital. They say it isn't a job, it's life for Texas Children. So we thank them for their presenting sponsorship of this first hour. Let's take a break. We'll take your phone call, 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. Favorite World Cup moment? Could be here in 2018. Who do you got in the final, France or Croatia?
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from the gorgeous Gale in Rice Village, this is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
The first hour of Soccer Matters is brought to you by Texas Children's Hospital. Here's Glenn Davis.
Pushed ahead. Here's Hazard. Step behind the defender. Hazard! Goal! That should put it away for Belgium.
Well, JP, we just talked about it. England needed to find one. That final product hasn't been there. And then the counterattack for Belgium. And that's how quick it can happen when you've got Kevin De Bruyne and that man, Eden Hazard, running at you. And this time he makes no mistake.
That's frightening when a counterattack is led by Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne. It's just stunning to watch it in full flight against Japan. We'll always remember that indelible moment when it left the hands of a goalkeeper and the counterattack was in motion. Courtois rolls it, and boom, that was one of the greatest counterattacks that'll be remembered in World Cup history. Again, we thank the Texas Children's Hospital for being presenting sponsors here in this first hour. Hey, I want to say a quick shout-out to my friends at Advantage BMW downtown, and my friend Philip Southwick of Advantage is going to be in here tomorrow at the gorgeous Gale 5555 Morningside to watch the World Cup final. I love the drive of a BMW. They've taken care of me for years down there. I drive a 5 Series. I've owned from them. I've leased. Absolutely love the car. But the thing I really love is customer service at BMW. Second to none. Advantage BMW has you covered, sales, service, finance, and it can be done so easy. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. My good friends Philip, Justin, Sergio Martinez. These guys all love soccer, football. They love the World Cup. If you're thinking about a BMW, go to Advantage BMW in Midtown. And they're having a big party on Tuesday at Silver Street Studios. I'm planning on going over there to look at the new BMWs and dream. That's basically it. 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. So, you know, when I went to break, Eric, we just said, what is the approach in this game? So let's start with France. And by the way, before you get to that, we're getting, Yolomar has said France 4-1 tomorrow. You think there's 5 goals in this?
It all depends on how, you know, what Croatia, how they come out and play. Are they going to come out and stretch the game? Are they going to sort of show France a lot of respect and sit in deep? And so just, you know, tactics can really keep, you know, a scoreline tight, or it can stretch it based on, you know, how France is able to exploit it.
Michael Simpson says Croatia. He put 2 Croatian flags. That's his pick. Hector says, most memorable World Cup moment, watching the 2002 World Cup tournament with my dad, especially the final when Brazil won its 5th title. My dad and I celebrated. He almost broke my arm by falling on me. I was 12 years old. That from Hector Dos Santos. Joe Williams says, heart says Croatia, head says France. I think that's one that probably is circulating around with a lot of people. Soccer has apparently arrived in the U.S. because that Snoop Dogg has rocked a Croatia jersey. There you go. I think I've seen Snoop Dogg rock a lot of jerseys. I think he's a jersey guy.
Does he wear anything else besides the jersey?
Snoop Dogg, where is Croatia on the globe? That's what. Where is Croatia on the globe? Nothing like celebrities wearing jerseys. You know, we always love that in the United States. We'll slap an MLS jersey on a celebrity without a blink of the eye. We don't care. We just want that PR.
That's right.
Baby! All right. 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776. All right. What about Croatia's approach, Eric?
I just think they have to be really smart in their tactics and organized deeper. Because I just think you don't want to give a lot of space to Mbappe and Griezmann, these guys. And I think, it's just not a – I just don't think they can afford to go out and press and into areas that can get them hurt. Not to say that they won't. I mean, maybe you do it in stages when you sort of take control of the game, if you feel. But I think early on to start the game, I think they're going to have to start respecting France right off the bat. And look to sort of build once they've turned them over and build into the attack versus, going and pressing and then, that's just not who – I just don't think that's a smart game plan. On the flip side, France, they have the speed to, if they wanted to be effective, to press and really try to jump on them early. But I think Croatia's got enough quality that they can break that. I think they can get out of those pressing situations with the class of Rakitic and Modric. So I think for Didier, it's probably who do you want to see have the ball more coming out of the back? Do you want their right side, left side? How do you avoid?
Salko, Strinic, the two outside backs, and then Lovren and Vida, the two center backs for Croatia.
Yeah. So who do you want to have the ball at their feet more? Who can hurt you the least? You really want to plug up passing lanes into Modric and Mandzukic. I think that Mandzukic is going to have I think he's going to have a struggle with Umtiti, Varane. I just think that they're going to have to find their way in the wide areas, Croatia. They're not going to find anything much centrally. I think they're going to have to really build around the edges and see if they can't get to the byline and pull balls back. I just think that's how you're going to really be effective against France. You're not going to really be able to play through them, through that central defender tandem. I think they're too strong in there. So I think if I'm Croatia, I'm trying to get around the edges of those wide areas to really and just swing in a lot of balls.
All right, hold that thought. We're up on a hard break. I'm going to keep you for one more segment because there's a question I want to ask you that I couldn't get in because you had so many good things you were saying there. But it is about the approach to the game and specifically about Croatia. We'll talk about that when we come back from commercial break. Just want to remind you again about Texas Children's Hospital, our presenting sponsor of the first hour here. Today, Texas Children's Hospital is the leading pediatric hospital in the country. They use genomic sequencing to provide state-of-the-art personalized cancer treatment for children. By the way, it's a shining star in our medical center, the Texas Children's Hospital. They're also world leaders in pediatric cancer research, training the next generation of pediatric hematologists and oncologists, global health and innovative support programs for patients and their families. So Texas Children's Hospital, I remind you, is a not-for-profit organization, relies on generous donations from the community and beyond to help provide high-quality programs and services. I sit on a 501c charity called the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, which is a wing to raise money and funds. It's 501c charity for pediatric cancer research. And we just had a wonderful banquet that was spearheaded by the noted author Tom Clare. We had that downtown at the Hyatt. And we had the legendary goalkeeper Alex Stepney here from England, who won the European Cup, in fact, against Benfica, and had that infamous save against the Eusebio, who many people will remember at the time was up amongst, people would mention Pelé, then they'd mention Eusebio back then. But Alex was just a wonderful man, went around Houston speaking, and we really put him to the test, but he was just exceptional, and we raised some great funds and awareness for the Texas Children's Hospital and pediatric cancer. All right, let's take a break. It's a Bud Light break here from 5555 Morningside Drive. It is the one and only Gorgeous Gale. And tomorrow, get here early. Get here at 8 a.m. for the World Cup final between France and Croatia.
Bellevue, Houston, ESPN 97.5. A Gal Media Station.